A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it starts with a beautifully mundane problem. Wall anchors. He's trying to get them out of the wall, asks ChatGPT for advice, and the AI casually recalls that a few days ago, he bought a specific power tool that might work on a specific setting. Didn't prompt it. Didn't say, remember I bought this? It just knew.
That moment is the thing, right? Not the tool recommendation itself, that's basic. It's that the retrieval happened invisibly. Daniel didn't ask it to check memory, he asked about wall anchors. The system connected wall anchors to Power Tool Purchase Tuesday on its own, in the background, and surfaced the relevant fact without being told to.
Which is what makes it feel like magic, and also what makes the engineering so much harder than people assume. The better the memory gets, the less you see it working. It disappears into the experience. But under the hood, the complexity is exploding in direct proportion to how seamless it feels.
The paradox of good design applied to AI memory. And Daniel's real question is the one that sits underneath that magic trick. How do you actually build this? Not the user-facing memory list from the early ChatGPT days where you could scroll through a bunch of saved facts and delete them manually. The new thing. The invisible thing. The thing where the AI just remembers what's relevant without being asked and without burning through half the context window to do it.
Because that's the constraint that makes this a real engineering problem. Daniel says he has maybe 3 or 4 short chats a day. Over months, that's hundreds of interactions, thousands of facts, preferences, life details. You can't load all of that into every prompt. You'd eat the token budget before the conversation even starts.
Token budgets are the silent tyrant of all of this. A typical ChatGPT context window runs from about 8,000 tokens up to 128,000. That sounds enormous until you start doing the math on what a year of conversational memory looks like. Even heavily compressed, even just the extracted facts, you're looking at something that could easily consume 50, 60, 70% of the available window, leaving almost nothing for the actual conversation the user is trying to have right now.
You can't brute force it. The naive approach. Just dump the user's entire memory file into the system prompt and hope for the best. That's a dead end. It doesn't scale past the first week of usage.
That's where the retrieval pattern comes in. Instead of storing memories in the prompt, you store them externally, in a vector database, and you go fetch only the ones that are relevant to whatever the user is asking about right now. The system converts the current conversation into a query, searches the memory store for similar content, grabs the top few matches, and injects just those into the context. Everything else stays in the database, silent, consuming no tokens.
Which is exactly what happened with Daniel's wall anchors. The system didn't load his entire purchase history. It saw wall anchors, converted that into a vector embedding, ran a similarity search against stored memories, and found, bought a rotary hammer on Tuesday, sitting somewhere nearby in that semantic space. Injected that one fact. Probably cost fewer than 50 tokens. The rest of his life stayed in storage.
That's the retrieval augmented generation pattern, RAG, which has become the backbone of basically every serious AI memory system. Pinecone, Weavy8, Chroma, these are all vector databases purpose built for exactly this. You store embeddings, numerical representations of text, and you search them by similarity. It's not keyword matching, it's not grep. It's what concepts in memory are semantically close to what the user is talking about right now.
Which is why it can connect wall anchors to rotary hammer without either phrase appearing in both the question and the stored memory. The embeddings capture the relationship between the concepts, not just the words.
Daniel didn't say, "Remember that tool I bought." The word tool didn't even appear in his question. But the embedding space knows that wall anchor removal and power tools are conceptually adjacent. So the retrieval finds the connection, even though the surface-level text doesn't match.
The retrieval side is, I won't say solved, but it's well understood. There are mature tools for it. The harder question, and the one Daniel is really poking at, is the save side. How does the system decide what to store in the first place, without the user explicitly saying, save this?
Right, because before you can retrieve, you have to have saved. And you can't save everything. If you try to store every sentence of every conversation, your vector database balloons into a bloated mess. The retrieval quality degrades because you're searching through a haystack of irrelevant chit-chat, and your storage costs spiral.
You need a heuristic, some set of rules, implicit or explicit, that decides this fact is worth keeping, and this one isn't. And the system has to make that call without asking the user. That's the seamlessness Daniel's describing.
We don't know exactly how OpenAI does this because they don't disclose the internals. But we can make some educated guesses based on what the research literature suggests and what open source projects like MemGPT, now called Leda, have implemented. The core signals are probably things like recency, frequency, and what you might call semantic salience.
Break those down.
Recency is the simplest. Things mentioned in the last few days get weighted higher. Frequency is also straightforward. If the user mentions their dog's name across 5 different conversations, that's probably worth storing. Semantic salience is the more interesting one. The system looks for statements that have the shape of a fact. I just bought a rotary hammer. I'm allergic to penicillin. I work as a structural engineer. These have a different linguistic profile than that's interesting or tell me more.
The model is essentially reading the conversation and flagging sentences that look like durable facts about the user, as opposed to transient conversational filler.
That's the likely approach. And then there's probably an implicit feedback loop as well. If the system retrieves a memory and the user doesn't correct it, if Daniel says, "How do I get these anchors out?" and the AI says, "You could use that rotary hammer you bought," and Daniel doesn't respond with, "I didn't buy a rotary hammer," that silence is a signal. It confirms that the stored memory was accurate and relevant. The system can use that to reinforce the save decision retroactively.
Which is clever, because it means the memory system is constantly self-correcting, without ever asking for explicit feedback. The user's normal behavior is the feedback.
The flip side is also true. If the AI retrieves a memory and the user says, "No, that's wrong, I return that tool," that's a correction signal. The system can update or delete the memory based on that interaction alone. No need for a separate memory management interface.
Although that does raise the question of what happens when the memory store grows large enough that contradictions start to appear. Daniel buys a rotary hammer on Tuesday. On Thursday, he says, "I hate power tools. I'm switching to hand tools only." Which fact wins?
That's the conflict resolution problem, and it's genuinely hard. Most systems handle it with timestamp waiting. Newer facts get higher priority than older ones, on the assumption that the user's current state is more relevant than their historical one. But that's a heuristic, not a solution. There are edge cases where the older fact is actually the stable one, and the newer statement was sarcastic or hypothetical or about a specific context that the system didn't catch.
"I hate power tools," said while struggling with a particularly stubborn anchor might not mean delete my tool inventory from memory.
And that's where the invisible memory approach starts to show its weaknesses. When memory was user-facing, when you could open a panel and see a list of saved facts and delete them manually, you had agency. You could fix mistakes. When the memory is invisible, you're trusting the system's heuristics, and when those heuristics fail, you might not even know they failed until the AI confidently asserts something wrong about your life.
Which is the trust problem that sits underneath all of this. The engineering is solvable. The retrieval pipelines work. The vector databases scale. The embedding models are good and getting cheaper. Text embedding. 3 small from OpenAI costs fractions of a cent per query. The pieces are all there. But the question of how invisible you want the memory to be, that's not an engineering question. That's a design philosophy question.
It's one the industry is still wrestling with. The early ChatGPT approach was highly visible. Here are your memories, manage them. The current approach is nearly invisible. Trust us, we'll handle it. There's a spectrum between those two poles, and I don't think anyone has found the sweet spot yet.
That's the landscape Daniel's question opens up. On one end, you've got the token budget problem forcing you towards selective retrieval. On the other end, you've got the save heuristic problem forcing you toward invisible decisions. And in the middle, you've got the user, who just wants the AI to remember the relevant thing at the relevant moment without having to think about it.
The wall anchor moment is the platonic ideal of that working correctly. One relevant fact, retrieved silently, injected seamlessly, producing exactly the right response. The question is, how often it fails in ways the user never sees, and what we do about those failures. That failure mode, the invisible failure, is what makes this such a fascinating engineering problem. Because before you can even get to the retrieval and the conflict resolution and all of that, you have to answer a more fundamental question. What does memory actually mean for a system that has no persistent state?
A transformer model. The thing doing the actual text generation. It doesn't remember anything. Every time you send a prompt, the model wakes up with complete amnesia. It processes whatever tokens you give it, generates a response, and then goes back to sleep. There is no continuity between sessions.
This is the misconception that trips up most users. They say ChatGPT remembered my dog's name, and they imagine the model itself has learned something, that there's some internal weight update happening. There isn't. The model is frozen. What actually happened is that somewhere, in a database completely separate from the model, there's a record that says, user's dog is named Rufus. And before the model generated its response, some other system went and fetched that record and quietly slipped it into the prompt.
AI memory isn't memory in the cognitive sense. It's memory in the filing cabinet sense. The model is the analyst reading the file. The file itself lives elsewhere.
That distinction matters because it determines everything about how you engineer the system. If memory were actually inside the model, if the model were continuously learning from conversations, you'd have a completely different set of problems. Catastrophic forgetting, training instability, the impossibility of deleting anything. The external storage approach is actually the pragmatic one. It gives you control. You can add memories, delete memories, update memories, all without touching the model weights.
Which is why the old user-facing approach was so straightforward. You had a literal list. The system stored facts as plain text in a database. You could see them, edit them, delete them. It was basically a notepad that got appended to the system prompt before every conversation.
That worked fine when the memory list was small. 50 facts, 100 facts, no problem, just prepend them. But Daniel's scenario is the one that breaks that model. 3 or 4 conversations a day, over months, accumulating hundreds or thousands of facts. At some point, you cross a threshold where the memory list alone is larger than what you can reasonably prepend to every prompt without destroying the quality of the conversation.
Because context windows aren't just about capacity, they're about attention. The model pays attention to everything in the prompt, but the more you stuff in there, the more diluted that attention becomes. It's the needle in a haystack problem. Drop a single relevant fact into a prompt that's 90% irrelevant life history, and the model might simply miss it.
That's the core tension Daniel's question exposes. Memory utility versus context window constraints. You want the AI to know everything about you, but you can't afford to tell it everything about you in every single conversation. So you need a system that knows what to tell and what to hold back. That's not a model problem. That's an information retrieval problem dressed up in AI clothing.
The old approach, the visible memory list, it solved the trust problem beautifully. You could see exactly what the AI knew about you, but it failed on the scaling problem. The new approach solves the scaling problem. Only relevant memories get loaded, but it creates a trust deficit. You don't know what the system remembers. You don't know what it forgot. You don't know what it thinks it remembers but got wrong.
The engineering challenge Daniel is pointing at is really a three-part problem. Part 1, the save decision. What gets stored? Part 2, the retrieval decision. What gets loaded into any given prompt? And Part 3, which nobody talks about enough, the audit problem. How does the user know what's happening in Parts 1 and 2 without having to manage it manually?
That third part is where the design philosophy comes in. Do you give users a dashboard they can check if they want to? Do you surface memory usage occasionally? By the way, I remembered you bought a rotary hammer. Is that still relevant? Do you build in periodic memory summaries? There are a dozen possible approaches, and none of them are obviously correct.
What's interesting is that ChatGPT's evolution mirrors this tension. They started with the fully transparent approach. Here's your memory list, manage it. Then they moved toward invisibility. We'll handle it, trust us. But they didn't eliminate the visibility entirely. You can still access memory settings. You can still delete memories if you dig for the option. They just made the default experience seamless and tucked the controls one layer deeper.
Which is probably the right call for most users. Most people don't want to curate a memory database. They want the wall anchor moment. The AI just knows the relevant thing. But the power users, the people like Daniel who are thinking about building their own systems, they need to understand that the seamlessness is an illusion produced by a load of moving parts working correctly in the background.
Those moving parts are what we should dig into next. Because once you accept that memory is external, that context windows are finite, and that retrieval has to be selective, the question becomes, what does that pipeline actually look like under the hood?
Walk me through it. Daniel types, how do I get these wall anchors out? What actually happens, step by step, in a well-engineered system?
The first thing that happens is the system takes that query and runs it through an embedding model. Text embedding, 3small for example. Out the other side comes a vector. A list of numbers, probably 1500 or so dimensions, that represents the semantic content of how do I get these wall anchors out of the wall, not the words.
Meaning here includes the implicit context. This is a home improvement question. It involves tools. It involves extraction. It involves frustration.
All of that gets compressed into those 1500 numbers. Then the system takes that vector and runs a similarity search against the vector database where all of Daniel's stored memories live. Cosine similarity, usually. It's asking, in effect, which stored memories are conceptually closest to what Daniel is asking about right now.
Somewhere in that database is a vector representing Daniel bought a rotary hammer on Tuesday. Recommended setting for concrete is hammer mode with a chisel bit.
And because the embedding model understands that wall anchor removal and rotary hammers occupy nearby regions in semantic space, that memory vector lights up as a close match. The system grabs it, along with maybe the top 3 or 5 most similar memories, and injects them into the system prompt. Something like, the user previously purchased a rotary hammer. Relevant context, the hammer mode with a chisel bit is suitable for breaking concrete around wall anchors.
The model itself never knew any of this. It wakes up, sees a prompt that includes both the wall anchor question and the rotary hammer context, and generates a response that connects the two. The magic is in what got put in front of it, not in anything the model remembered.
The model is the brilliant but amnesiac consultant who reads whatever briefing document you hand it and gives you great advice. The briefing document is what the retrieval pipeline assembled. The consultant has no idea what else is in the filing cabinet.
The retrieval side is a solved pipeline. Embed, search, inject. The part that keeps me up is the save side. How does the rotary hammer fact get into that vector database in the first place without Daniel ever saying save this?
This is where the heuristics get interesting. In a naive system, you'd need Daniel to explicitly flag information. Remember, I bought a rotary hammer. That's the old approach, and it works, but it's exactly the friction Daniel wants to eliminate.
Users are terrible at remembering to remember things. They're also terrible at knowing what will be relevant later. Daniel didn't know, when he bought the rotary hammer, that he'd be asking about wall anchors 3 days later. If he had to manually decide what to save, he probably wouldn't have saved that purchase. It seemed mundane. The system has to make that call on his behalf.
I think there are at least 3 categories of signals. The first is linguistic structure. The model, or a separate classifier, is scanning the conversation for sentences that have the shape of durable facts. I bought X. I work as Y. I'm allergic to Z. These are declarative, first-person statements about the user's state or possessions or preferences. They're structurally different from, that's interesting, or tell me more about concrete. The system can flag them with reasonably high confidence.
It's not saving everything. It's saving sentences that look like facts about Daniel.
The second signal is repetition. If Daniel mentions his dog Rufus in one conversation, that might be noise. If he mentions Rufus across 4 different conversations in 2 weeks, that's a durable entity. The system can use frequency across sessions as a confidence booster. This thing keeps coming up. It's probably worth storing permanently. Some facts just matter more than others. I'm allergic to penicillin is medically significant. I had toast for breakfast is not. The system can use the embedding model itself to assess how much a given fact connects to other stored memories. A fact that sits at the intersection of many domains, health, purchases, work, family, is probably more worth keeping than something isolated and trivial.
You've got structure, repetition, and connectedness. Three different lenses on the same composition, all running silently in the background.
Then there's the implicit feedback loop I mentioned earlier. The system retrieves the rotary hammer memory. Daniel doesn't correct it. That non-correction is a signal that the saved decision was good. The system can log that this memory was retrieved and accepted, and use it to reinforce similar saved decisions in the future.
Which means the system is effectively training a lightweight classifier on Daniel's behavior without him ever knowing. Every accepted retrieval is a positive example. Every correction is a negative one.
That's the elegance of it. The user's normal interaction with the AI is the training data. No separate feedback step required. The system learns what's worth saving by observing what gets used.
The pitfall, though, is oversaving. If the threshold is too low, the vector database fills up with noise. I had toast for breakfast, get stored alongside I'm allergic to penicillin, and when the retrieval pipeline goes looking for relevant memories, it's searching through a much larger haystack. The needle gets harder to find.
Not just harder to find. The retrieval might surface the wrong thing entirely. You ask about wall anchors and it retrieves user-discussed breakfast preferences because the embedding space found some spurious connection. The injected context becomes noise rather than signal. And noise in the system prop degrades the quality of everything the model generates.
The save heuristic is fundamentally about precision. You want to store as little as possible while still capturing the facts that will matter later. It's a compression problem dressed as a classification problem.
The cost of getting it wrong is asymmetrical. Undersaving means the AI occasionally fails to recall something useful. Annoying, but not catastrophic. Oversaving means the retrieval quality degrades across the board. The AI becomes actively worse at its job because it's drowning in irrelevant context.
Which is why I suspect the production systems err on the side of undersaving. Better to miss a few relevant memories than to poison the retrieval pipeline with noise.
And that's probably why you sometimes get the experience of thinking, wait, I told you this last week. The system's save threshold was just slightly too conservative for that particular fact.
Whereas the wall anchor moment is the system getting it exactly right. The purchase was saved. The retrieval found it. The injection was seamless. Daniel didn't notice the memory system at all. He just got a useful answer. That's the asymptote.
That asymptote gets harder to maintain as the memory store grows. Daniel's been using ChatGPT for what, a couple of years now? 3 or 4 chats a day. Even with conservative saving, that's thousands of stored facts. And those facts don't all stay equally relevant forever.
The job change problem. Daniel switches careers, moves to a new city, picks up new hobbies. The old facts are still in the vector database, still getting retrieved, still competing for space in the context window. At some point, the system has to forget things, not just remember them.
Forgetting is actually harder than remembering, from an engineering standpoint. You can't just delete everything older than 6 months. Some old facts are permanently relevant. I'm allergic to penicillin. Doesn't expire. I worked at Company X does, or at least it should decay in retrieval priority once you've moved on.
You need memory decay. That's semantic, not just chronological. The system has to understand which categories of facts are durable and which are transient.
This is where memory compaction comes in. The idea is that periodically, maybe once a week, maybe after every N conversations, the system runs a background process that looks at the memory store and says, okay, what can we consolidate? Instead of storing 7 separate facts about Daniel's old job, summarize them into one. Daniel worked at Company X from 2024 to early 2026 as a structural engineer. That's one vector instead of 7. And it gets weighted lower in retrieval priority because it's tagged as a past role rather than a current one.
Which is eerily close to how human memory works. We don't remember every day at an old job. We remember the summary. The specific details fade unless something prompts them.
The vector database equivalent of that fading is timestamp-weighted retrieval. When the system searches for relevant memories, it applies a recency multiplier. A fact stored yesterday gets a higher score than an identical match stored a year ago. The older memory is still there. It's not deleted. But it has to work harder to get retrieved. It needs a stronger semantic match to overcome the time penalty.
Which handles the contradiction problem, at least partially. Daniel says, I hate power tools today. Yesterday he bought a rotary hammer. Both facts are in the database. The retrieval query hits both. But today's statement gets the recency boost, so it surfaces first. The system presents the current preference, not the historical purchase.
Unless the query is specifically about tool purchases, in which case the semantic match on rotary hammer might be strong enough to overcome the recency penalty on I hate power tools. And that's the kind of edge case that makes this hard. You can't just blindly trust the similarity score plus the timestamp. You need some kind of conflict detection layer that notices when two retrieved memories contradict each other and makes a deliberate choice about which one to surface.
Or surfaces both and lets the model sort it out. You mentioned hating power tools recently, though you bought a rotary hammer on Tuesday. Want to give the hammer a try, or looking for a manual alternative?
Which is actually the best UX, when it works. But it requires the system to recognize the contradiction in the first place, which is a whole separate classification problem layered on top of the retrieval pipeline.
Everything in this space turns out to be a classification problem layered on top of another classification problem.
They all have to run fast. That's the part that doesn't get enough attention. Every memory retrieval adds latency. Embed the query, that's maybe 50 milliseconds. Run the similarity search against a database with millions of vectors. That could be 100 to 500 milliseconds depending on the index structure. Then you've got to inject the results into the prompt and send everything to the model.
Daniel types, how do I get these anchors out? And the system has maybe 300 or 400 milliseconds of invisible work to do before the model even starts generating. And users expect ChatGPT to feel instantaneous.
Which is why production systems hide this latency aggressively. One approach is prefetching. As soon as Daniel opens a chat, before he types anything, the system starts embedding recent conversation context and warming up the memory cache. By the time he hits enter, half the work is already done. Another approach is asynchronous embedding generation. The moment a conversation ends, the system runs the save heuristic in the background and generates embeddings for anything worth storing. The user never waits for it.
If Daniel asks a follow-up about the same wall and anchors 30 seconds later, the system doesn't rerun the full retrieval. It keeps the top K memories from the previous query in a short-lived cache and reuses them.
Pinecone's serverless architecture is interesting here because it decouples storage from compute. You're not paying for a dedicated instance that sits idle between queries. The index scales down to zero when nobody's searching and spins up in a couple hundred milliseconds when a query comes in. For a system like ChatGPT with millions of users, that cold start latency matters a lot less than the cost savings.
Versus an in-memory solution where you keep the entire index loaded in RAM for sub-millisecond retrieval. Much faster, much more expensive. Makes sense for latency-sensitive enterprise deployments, but probably not for a consumer product at ChatGPT scale.
This is where the open-source alternatives get interesting, because they let you see all of these trade-offs explicitly. MemGPT, now called Leda, gives the LLM a hierarchical memory system with a working context, a main context, and archival storage. The archival storage is basically a vector database with automatic compaction. The system periodically summarizes old conversations, pushes the summaries into archival, and only loads them when relevant. It's the same pattern we've been describing, but exposed for you to configure.
LangChain's memory modules take a similar approach. They give you building blocks. Conversation buffer memory, summary memory, vector store-backed memory. You can mix and match, but you have to make all the decisions yourself. Embedding model, vector database, similarity threshold, compaction schedule, save heuristics.
Which is both the power and the limitation. You get transparency. You know exactly what's being saved and why, but you also have to do the work. There's no invisible magic. And that's the trade-off Daniel is navigating. Does he want the seamless experience where someone else made all those decisions, or the auditable one where he made them himself?
The industry is betting that most users want the seamless one, and I think that's probably right. But it creates a weird asymmetry where the people who care most about what the AI remembers about them are the ones with the least visibility into how those decisions get made. If you're sitting there thinking, great, I want to build this, where do you actually start without getting buried in complexity?
That's the real advice. Spin up a vector database, Pinecone's free tier works, or Chroma if you want something local, and pair it with text embedding. Three small. Build the simplest possible pipeline, explicit save commands only. The user says, remember X, your system stores it, that's it. No heuristics, no classifiers, no automatic anything.
Which feels like a step backward from what Daniel's describing, but the point is, you need the retrieval working reliably before you layer on automatic saving. If your similarity search is returning garbage, no amount of clever save logic will fix it.
Get the embed search inject loop solid first. Once retrieval is reliable, then you can start adding save heuristics, and even then, don't jump straight to full automation. Add a lightweight flagging system. The AI notices something worth saving and says, "Want me to remember that?" One click, user confirms, fact gets stored. You're still reducing friction without going fully invisible.
That intermediate step gives you training data. Every time the user says yes or no to a save suggestion, you're learning what's actually worth storing for that specific user. After a few weeks of that, you've got a labeled dataset you can use to train a save classifier that's tuned to their actual behavior.
For the power users who want to replicate something closer to ChatGPT's current behavior today, MemGPT, Leda Now is the closest off-the-shelf option. It gives you that hierarchical memory architecture with automatic compaction and retrieval. LangChain's memory modules are the other path if you want more control over each piece.
The key decision with either approach is what you embed. Do you store entire conversation transcripts, or do you extract and store individual facts? Transcripts preserve context, but they're noisy. Extracted facts are cleaner, but you lose the surrounding conversational nuance that might matter later.
The answer is probably both, at different layers. Store extracted facts in your fast retrieval index. That's what gets searched for every query. Store full transcripts in cheaper cold storage. That's what you go back to when you need the original context around a fact. It's the same hot-warm-cold tiering pattern that databases have used for decades, just applied to semantic memory.
Which brings us to the question that doesn't have a satisfying answer yet. All of this engineering works. The pipelines are mature. The tools exist. But how do you make a memory system that's both seamless and auditable? Because right now, those two goals are in direct tension. The more invisible you make the memory, the less the user knows what's being stored, what's being retrieved, and what's being quietly forgotten.
I think this is where regulation is eventually going to land. The EU's AI Act already has provisions around transparency and explainability. It's not hard to imagine a future where AI systems are required to provide a memory explanation on request. Here's what I know about you. Here's why I retrieved this specific fact for this specific query. Here's what I chose not to store and why.
Which sounds burdensome until you realize that most of that information already exists in the pipeline logs. The embedding model knows what it searched for. The vector database knows what it returned. The save classifier knows what it flagged and what it discarded. It's just that nobody is surfacing any of it to the user right now.
The engineering is solvable. The trust problem is harder. And I suspect the companies that figure out how to make memory both seamless and auditable, not one or the other, are the ones that win the next phase of this. That's the open question I keep coming back to. Will we eventually see memory budgets the way we see API rate limits? Something a user can dial up or down. I want the AI to remember more about me. I'll accept higher latency and a larger token footprint. Or, keep it lean, I'd rather have speed than deep personalization.
Which would make memory a user-facing resource rather than a hidden system setting. You'd see something like memory usage, 60% of your allocation, and you could decide whether to bump it up or prune it back.
It flips the default. Right now, the system decides what to remember, and the user lives with the consequences. A memory budget makes it the user's decision, with the system still handling the mechanics, but within boundaries the user sets. It's the difference between trust us, we'll manage it, and here's the dial. You tell us how much to manage.
The counterargument is that most people don't want a dial. They don't want to think about memory allocation any more than they want to think about RAM management on their phone. The whole promise of this technology is that it just works.
That's fair. But I think there's a middle ground where the system ships with sensible defaults and the dial exists for people who want it. Power users get control. Everyone else gets seamlessness. The two aren't mutually exclusive.
The harder version of the question is whether we'll eventually need something like a right to explanation for AI memory. Not just, what do you know about me, but why did you retrieve that specific fact for that specific query? The chain of reasoning from embedding to similarity score to injection.
The uncomfortable truth is that most of that chain is already logged. The embedding was computed. The similarity score was calculated. The retrieval decision was made deterministically. It's all there. We just don't surface it.
Which means the transparency problem isn't a technical limitation. It's a product choice. Someone decided that showing the memory pipeline would confuse users or break the illusion of intelligence, and maybe they're right for the mass market. But for people like Daniel, people who are building these systems or relying on them for consequential decisions, the opacity is a liability.
The best AI memory is the one you don't notice. That's the design target everyone is aiming for. The wall anchor moment where the retrieval happens so seamlessly that you don't even think to ask how it worked. But that invisibility comes with responsibility. The system is making dozens of decisions on your behalf. What to save, what to discard, what to retrieve, what to prioritize, and if any of those decisions are wrong, you might never know.
The wrongness compounds. A bad save decision today means a missing retrieval next week. A stale fact left in the database means the AI confidently asserts something about your life that stopped being true 6 months ago. The failures are silent and cumulative.
The engineering is solvable. We've got the pipelines, the vector stores, the embedding models, the compaction strategies. The pieces work. The trust problem is harder because it's not about technology. It's about whether users feel like they're in control of a system, that is, by design, operating outside their awareness.
That's the thing I'd leave listeners with. Not, here's how to build a RAG pipeline. We've covered that. But the question of what kind of relationship you want with the AI that remembers your life. Do you want it to be a silent, seamless assistant that handles everything in the background? Or do you want visibility into what it knows and how it decides? Because right now the industry is betting heavily on the first one, and I'm not sure anyone's asked users which they prefer.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the late Victorian period, a British astronomer stationed in what is now South Sudan proposed that cosmic rays were actually the souls of the dead ascending through the atmosphere. He built a series of gold-leaf electroscopes to measure their moral density and published his findings in an 1887 issue of the Philosophical Magazine before the theory was quietly abandoned.
Moral density.
I have so many questions, and I want the answer to none of them.
This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flemingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.